You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this.
Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Heidi Medina. And what we're going to talk about is making an international relocation. So before we get started, I have a question for you to think about. If you were going to move 7,000 miles from home, what would you want to take with you? And while you think about that, let's do this. Heidi Medina, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am totally ready. Let's do this.
Let's do it. Today, we're going to talk about you making an international move, which is a topic I love to do. But first, I'd love to know a little bit more about you personally before we dive in. Tell us a little bit about you outside of your job, outside of where you live, maybe the important people in your life, maybe some hobbies, whatever you want to share, as little or as much as you want to share.
Oh, you left that door wide open. Let me see. I moved to Portugal 6 years ago with my husband. In that time frame, I have been building my fifth business. I have also retired him from the corporate world. For fun, I have a food blog, Simply Sophisticated Cooking, that I started, oh gosh, it's been over a decade ago now. What else? Oh, I enjoy coloring with color pencils. I just got into watercolor pencils, which, by the way, if you have not tried them, highly recommend. Cool music. I'm all over the place on music. And I enjoy a good 3-hour lunch with friends with wine.
That sounds fabulous. All of it sounds fabulous. I don't know what watercolor pencils are, but I'm going to check them out. I'm definitely going to check them out. So international moving is a very popular topic for a lot of reasons, right? For a lot of reasons. So it gets a lot of attention for different things, but people have been doing it for a long time. You are in Portugal now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you speak Portuguese?
Working on it. I'm not fluent, but can I carry on small conversations and stuff like that? Yes.
All right. Very good. So let's back up. You moved how long ago? You said it, but say it again.
6 years ago, October of 2018.
October of 2018. So that is before a lot of the things really shifted then with lockdown and all kind of things. So you were in Europe for all of that. Oh my goodness. Yeah. That's all right. Very good. Where did you live when you were in the States before you did your Amerexit?
Colorado. And actually, the 3 years before we moved, we were actually digital nomads for 3 years, combination of being in the US and Europe for three solid years. And that we decided that we just weren't cut out for full-time travel. We now slow travel 3 to 4 months out of the year. But it was really a blast. We did almost a year and a half of that over here in Europe and Morocco, UK, those kind of places. And then we did almost a year and a half in the US in a lot of states we hadn't been to before or just hadn't spent a lot of time in. So it was a blast. And then Colorado is actually home. I'm originally from North Carolina, but I moved away from there in 2007. This is when I moved to Colorado, and that's when I met my husband, David.
All right, so this is a great story. All right, so let's talk about that. So you guys were digital nomads, and you were traveling full time. Does that mean you were doing the van life thing, or were you going from Airbnb to Airbnb?
Yeah, we were doing that. Well, it was a combination. So we did a combination of things. We did do Airbnbs. We did like month-long stays in each, at least in each country we were in, or states, because part of them were in the U.S. But we were also doing house sitting. And I don't know if you've ever heard of Workaway, which is a work in exchange for all your living stuff, you know, your place you live, food, everything like that. We did some of those as well while we were in Europe, which was freaking amazing. And we do house sitting in exchange too around the world. So we've done some pretty cool things and been the really neat places that we might not have gone to without those.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I have not heard of Workaway. I've heard of a bunch of other things that are doing that. Like I've heard of there's a program where you can go be on somebody's farm and you pitch in,
Wolfing,
right? Yep.
yeah,
And
wolf.
so heard of that. I've heard of 30 Days in a Wake Up, which is a sub like you sign on for a year and they plan it for you, because there are different ways to do it. And there was a point in lockdown where I was sort of obsessed with van life and following people who were doing it. And there is a side. It looks like the perpetual travel. It looks really fun because that's what they show you. But as I was like thinking about it, I was like, oh, you know, I think I would want to come home and like sleep in my bed or check into the Marriott, you know, for 5 or 6 days and have a hot shower, you know. So it is, and it does, but there are other parts of it that look like a lot of fun. But so you guys have been, this was a long time shift. You were moving away and like not living with a home base for a while. So
Yeah.
then the question I was going to ask, when did you start thinking about this move, but I'm going to back it up even further. When did you guys first begin to think about maybe we want to be untethered, maybe we don't want a home base? Like when did you first start to think about we're going to follow this non-traditional path?
This is weird. So this goes back whenever in 7th grade, my dad bought home first computer. We had one of the, I think it was a Tandy 1000 back in the day. This is even before laptops, all of that kind of stuff. But we had it for a few weeks, and I just looked at my dad and I said, one day I'm going to live and travel around the world working anywhere from a computer. And I kind of always had that dream with me, but I kept tying myself down to businesses that couldn't do that. Like I built a multi six-figure landscape company, and then I built a cleaning company. And in a spat in there was I worked for corporate for a couple of years, did corporate management, and I got diagnosed with cancer when I was 37. And it was kind of a big kick in the ass that, Heidi, you've been wanting to do this stuff. It's time to start putting that into play. And so that's when the idea really got serious. At that point, my husband David was he's heavily in oil and gas, the engineering side of things. And so he had an amazing job, which was of course hard to let go, benefits, high pay, everything. And we still, in the back of our mind, we were like, okay, we'll just start traveling more. And we ended up going to Italy and 2014, our first trip out of the country other than Mexico. But like overseas and that kind of stuff, we got a passport. I've had to get a passport because the first time we gone to Mexico, you didn't need them.
Back in
So
the old days.
that was back in the day when you could go on your ID.
I know.
We got our passports and we came to Europe for 2 weeks. So we spent the whole time in Italy, Florence and Rome, and that one. It was just like, we loved it, absolutely loved it. And still, we weren't thinking, we were just still thinking we'd take, 2 weeks to a month here and there and do some travel here and there. And then oil and gas industry lays everybody off every so often. It has slumps, they get laid off. It's like this cycle. And he came home one day in, I think it was about April 2015. He came home and he said, Heidi, he says, they're getting ready to lay me off again. I'm probably going to be laid off about a year this time before they call us back. He says, we've got the savings. We've talked about doing this. It would actually be cheap. He had run the numbers. He had spent several days running the numbers because he knew he was going to have to convince me. Because he was the primary at that point, breadwinner and everything. So he had came home with a spreadsheet showing that we could actually travel for less than staying in Denver because Denver's not cheap. And this was back in 2014. No, that was 2015. Sorry, 2014 was the first trip. And so I had to think about it for about a week, and then I kept looking in the spreadsheet and all that. We knew he was going to be laid off, and it's like I had already moved all my stuff online at that point. I had started doing content, social media management, writing the content for large corporations. So it was like I can do that on the road, and it was amazing. Our lease was coming up about the same time, so we were able to get out of that. We actually started house sitting because we were going to use that to help supplement, so we didn't have to use savings where we didn't want to. So we finished up like 3 months of house sitting in Denver right before we left because it was the gap between when our lease came up versus when we actually left to start traveling. And so we started our house sitting there, just getting in our local city, which worked out because we went ahead and got recommendations at that point. And from there, our first country we landed in was Italy for a month, and then Portugal was number two. We fell in love. And from that one, we went to Spain, and it continued from that point. It was just amazing. It really was. And that's what got us started.
That is very cool. So I think my favorite part of what you just shared was that you had this vision when you were in seventh grade that you would be able to do this. So when I was doing, what was the name of that game? Oregon Trail and Lemonade Stand and whatever those goofy game, Mario Kart, you were like, I'm going to be on a laptop someday turning this around. That's pretty forward thinking, I really think. So you and your husband were talking about this openly and you were making a plan. Who are some of the other people you first shared with that you were going to make the international move, that you were going to pack up and move to Portugal? And did you get any pushback, or were you so ensconced in like groups that were okay with it that it was just like, yeah, go?
No, it was a lot of pushback. Our friends thought we were crazy even when we did the digital nomad thing, and they were all relieved when we had come home because we come home. David's dad had gotten diagnosed with cancer, so we came home and moved back. He went back into oil and gas and got the job and everything back, and we were home for almost a year. But it just did. We had fallen in love with the life, the quality of life we had in Europe while we were here. And so we were like, okay, we're going to pack it up and go. We're not waiting till we're retired. And it's one of those things that, you look back and you're like, maybe I should have thought it through a little bit more. We actually came a year earlier than we planned. It just, sorry, traffic sometimes. It just we planned on staying there a year longer with him continuing to work while I was building up a business and really getting things off the ground because I had pivoted into coaching at that point, which is the business I'm in now. And it really wasn't fully launched yet and not massive with clients or anything. So we probably should have waited the year. But it was just time. He was hating his job. He was miserable. He was miserable. And he was just like, Heidi, let's just go. And so finally we were just like, okay, let's do it. Let's do it. So I actually built this business from the ground up during a move to a country. We don't know the language. Our friends and family, not happy. And everybody was like, you're not going to do it. It's not going to work. I mean, there was a handful, but most people were definitely massive pushback. And we were just like, this is what we want to do. It's where we want to live. We felt like you ever felt like you don't necessarily belong somewhere and you finally find the place you do?
I think that, I mean, definitely, for sure. So, and I think that people do often feel that. And either, I mean, maybe not everybody, but I think that a lot of, I know I do. I'll walk into, it can be like a local space, it can be a city, it can be a town, and I'll either get like a feeling, I'm like, this feels right, or this feels like I need to move along. I need to move along. And I spent, and some of those are longer stays than others, because you can make it work in a place where you don't feel totally comfortable. It's something with the kids in my family when they were choosing like schools and stuff, and they're like, how do you choose? And I'm like, no, but there's a thing about it. You'll get a feeling when you're walking through it, like these people look like people I like, this town looks like a place I'll have fun, it feels right.
And that's what it was. I mean, we had fallen in love with the quality of life living in Southern Europe, whether it was Spain, Italy, or Portugal. France was awesome. And it was so much more of a laid back life. It's not that people don't work, they do. But there's a different base of the thought process is to focus on have a good life, just not work yourself to death. And for us, that was really what we were looking for because both of us have been part of the rat race forever. I mean, building my companies, my first companies, I did the whole hustle and grind thing. I mean, especially my big multi six-figure landscape company, I was putting in 80 plus hours a week just working it. And yeah, it's my business. Everybody says, well, you did it, but that's what it took to do what I did at that point. And I just didn't know any better. I was a lot younger then. And today I'm building a business with so much less hustle. And just the emphasis now is a difference is on having a good life too, not just work yourself. And that was one thing that no matter where I've been in the States, it's always that emphasis on the difference is, here's one of the differences. When the States, the first question anybody ever asks you is, what do you do? Over here, it's not that. It's about, what do you do for fun? What do you
Is
do
that
to
what they ask you?
relax?
So that's an
Yeah.
interesting thing because I live in Miami, which has a different culture than other parts of the United States. Like every city has its own culture. So I'm not going to say like it's like a rainbow unicorn
Yeah.
thing. But the first question people ask you in Miami, as a local, not as a tourist, but as a local, the first question people ask you is, where are you from?
Yeah.
And so it's a really, really interesting distinction because, and it's for me, like as somebody who's not, it's a really international city. And I'm like, I'm from the United States. And they're like, no, but where are you from? And I'm like, okay,
Oh.
listen.
Yes.
Do you want the
Yes.
city? Do you want the state? Do you want like where my great great grandparents are? Like, what's the question here?
Well, in reality, that is the first question in Europe too, because everybody is from somewhere else. Because Europe is basically like the US with different states on the sizes. So even in the States, a lot of times you'll get which state are you from. But people don't really too often assume you're from anywhere else unless they can, there's some kind of visible clues that you maybe don't belong in the sense of you're an immigrant or something. But and I don't want to say don't belong. That's not right.
No, but that you're not, you don't
You're not
match the,
from
you
there.
don't,
You're
you don't
not
match
from
the
there.
culture. When I was,
Of
I did
course
it,
you belong.
right. When I was a student doing study abroad, one of my fellow students was very much, she wanted to look like a local. And she was this whole thing. And she was a delightful person. It was a really fun project. She's like, people will know that we're American. And I was like, okay. And I was going through this and I was a student, with like a student wardrobe. And then it occurred to me, I was like, people are gonna know anyway. Like the minute I open my mouth, people are gonna know. Like I'm not gonna like I was like, you go do this. I am gonna not worry about people knowing because this is not a secret that I'm not actually from here. So people are
Yeah,
gonna
that's for
know.
me. Being in Portugal, they immediately see my red hair and they know I'm not from here. Now my husband blends in, and his Portuguese is getting, he's a little bit ahead of me, and so he can pull it off part of the time, but usually the minute he opens his mouth, they still know he's not from there. But they'll walk up the street on him immediately, just everything in Portuguese. They look at me, they know I'm not from here. And it's funny. It's always funny because they immediately switch to English. And that has made it a little more difficult to learn the Portuguese just because they want to practice their English. And but I've learned what I'm learning to do now is if I know how to reply back, I go ahead and reply back in Portuguese so that I get to practice. They reply back in English and we both practice. So it works out.
No, and can you ask them? Do you sometimes say, "Hey, is it okay? Can I practice my Portuguese like that?" Because
Yes. Yes.
I've found that sometimes when I'm traveling and people pick up on the facts, and I'm like, "Hey, can we try this?" And they're like, "Sure." But it's very good. Okay, so when you were in the planning process of this, making the move, you had a lot of experience with the nomad life, which gives you, I think, a batch of skills. But do you remember what kind of fears you had, or apprehensions, or worries? What was on your mind that you were thinking about, like, oh, well, maybe?
I don't think we did at that point just because we had done all the travel ahead. I mean, there's always doubts, especially when you're moving somewhere. Did I pick the right place? Because we travel, we did so many cool places. There's so many, but for Portugal, for picking that alone was it just checked all the boxes, whereas a lot of other places didn't check as many.
What were
And
the boxes? What were you looking for in a place to go? Portugal is a really popular destination for,
it is, but we were here before it was popular. We were here right when they were coming out of a really bad recession. So it was all changing at that point, from coming out of a big slump of things. And that was before it got popular. It's very popular now. So It was, we must have fast internet. I mean, my dream has actually always been to live in Italy, and we do spend a good bit of time there now. But one problem we had in Italy when we, because we've spent literally months at a time there, was the internet was not only not overly fast, but sometimes it would go down for 2 or 3 days at a time. And God, I love the Italians. I wish I could have their mindset all the time. They're just basically like, okay, let's go drink some wine, do what we're gonna do. It'll be back when it's back. And I'm like, for me, for my work though, and here I am freaking out. So that just wasn't a thing. But Portugal has an extremely new internet system because they've just come out of as you guys could say, they've come out of dictatorship. Sorry, menopause brain sometimes. It's like, oh.
Brain fog.
It's like it was gone, but they've just only been out of a dictatorship, a really hard dictatorship for 50 years now. And so all their infrastructure's brand new. And so we have 1 gig direct fiber, cable fiber in our home all the time. And so our internet is extremely fast, which was a must. Good food. I had to be back close to the ocean because I grew up in the Wilmington area of North Carolina and Colorado, not having any ocean. I missed my seafood. I missed going to the beach. So that was a must. And good people, good food, close enough to an airport to get anywhere because we still travel. That was our biggies.
Those are
Easy. Then
yeah.
the visa system being relatively easy. And so that was our
Relative
most.
is a good is a good frame for that, because it is a process and
It is a process.
it is complicated. And I haven't done it. I say that just from hearing what people say talking about it. So, how long between, I think you've talked about this a little bit, how long between when you had this idea? You talked about how you moved a year before you expected to, but how long before between when you had the idea and when you actually loaded up your suitcases and got on the airplane did it take to plan the move?
About 8 months.
That's pretty fast. That's pretty fast. Do you think it was accelerated because you had already redesigned your life to be less tethered from the nomadic stuff?
There's no doubt that was why, because when we first did the digital nomad thing, we had already packed our 2-bedroom flat up into a storage unit. We had, at that point, we had already started downsizing because what we had done to pack everything away, we had sold one entire set of bedroom stuff off. Dining room tables were already gone. I mean, there was a lot of stuff already gone. So we packed enough to redo a 1-bedroom flat in a storage unit because we were like, okay, when we get back, whatever size we get, we can always get more furniture and stuff like that. So we had everything already in storage. And the minute we had started pulling stuff out of storage, it's funny when you come back, you're just like, you've been traveling for 3 years out of it. We each had a carry-on and a backpack. That's how we traveled for 3 years. We didn't put luggage under the plane. And so you've been traveling this minimalist life for 3 years, and you come back, you literally got a 1-bedroom flat in a mini storage unit, and all of a sudden you're unpacking that thing, and you feel like you are just swamped with stuff. So we're immediately already getting rid of more stuff. And you're also like, why did I store that? I mean, it
Yeah.
was all of this stuff. So we were already downsized, and we had. To already at that point, we had taken the cars down from one to two. And so this thing, it was relatively easy because we already knew how to do it all, to get rid of
Okay.
everything. And so when we decided to move, we didn't even bring a storage container like a lot of people did. We brought 4 giant suitcases, carry-ons, backpacks, and stuff. And we moved over. So in 8 months, once again, our lease on our flat had come due at the right time.
Yeah.
We house sat for the, we were actually from the time when our lease came up till we actually moved, we had 6 months. We did house sitting the whole time again, just in the Denver area. And that filled the gaps. We actually ended up doing 3 because we were able to get 2 or 3 months at each one. And then we moved.
Spectacular, spectacular. And I think it's helpful for people who are thinking about this to have a context for how much sort of ramp up in practice you did. You had been away from
Well, for
home, you had
some,
been tethered. Yeah.
well, and I think it depends on where you are in life. And see, we already had that mindset. We had already done a lot of the downsizing. We already weren't scared at that point. Because I mean, I know a lot of the expats I see coming over, the big thing people really is when they start having to let go of things. And then some of them literally pack it all into a storage unit and ship it over. And then they get here and they realize they don't need most of it. But I mean, I honestly would, if I could redo it, I would have shipped a small amount of stuff. Like my kitchen. I didn't realize how what you accumulate because I'm a chef. And I over the years I had about 25 years, I had accumulated all these professional kitchen stuff that I didn't think about what it was going to cost to replace. And not to mention because I would buy the good pieces at one at a time instead of needing it all at once. And so my kitchen stuff, when I probably had 50, 60,000 just in my kitchen. And so now I am still even 6 years in working on still replacing things because that was stuff I accumulated over decades.
Well,
So.
and that doesn't even take into account the emotional attachment to one's favorite pan. Right? When you have your double boiler, your enamel pan that you love, that's the pan. Nobody else is allowed to touch it. Nobody else is allowed to clean it. That's your pan.
I did ship all my knives.
That
They came
well,
in a
yeah.
suitcase.
I can totally see that. I can absolutely see. But that's portable, right? That's portable
It
and
is.
there's the attachment.
They
And
are.
so and we do get emotional attachments to things. I love that about the kitchen. I do think that that is a challenge. Every once in a while I think about the fact that, there was a phase, when I was younger, I used to move, I was moving between apartments every 6 months or whatever you do when you're a student. Everything I owned fit into like the back seat and trunk of a car, right? It was a wonderful way to live. And fast forward, it's like a moving truck, a specialist for this, like all of these things. It's such a production. It's like sell it all, buy it again, but that's a pain too. So that is very good. So what part of this process, the move, would you say caught you by surprise or that you under prepared for, other than the kitchen, favorite kitchen pans?
We actually should have applied for our visa from the US. So in Portugal, you actually don't. Well, and that could have changed now. So I don't want to send anybody the wrong
Sure,
direction.
right.
Back when we did it, you could apply from Portugal, which is, it was a mistake. If we had done it from the US, it would have taken approximately 3, maybe 3.5 months at the most. Doing it from Portugal took almost a year. So
And that
that
sounds like it
was.
went. That's a story I hear from a lot of people because you don't know what they're going to ask you for until they ask you for it. And sometimes it's like, well, I would have to get that from the United
Yes.
States. Like,
And
okay.
not only that, to get a lot of the documents had to be stamped by the US.
Right.
And you could do it at the embassy here, but it was so expensive. So if you had done it all in the States, this stuff's relatively cheap, getting copies of your records. What all and but everything had to be certified. And that required stamps literally on every document. For proof of who you were, birth certificates, you name it, it had to all be certified. And so we had to take it all to the US Embassy and have it done. Our fingerprints had to be done at the US Embassy. And in the States, you could go get that done for 10, 20 bucks anywhere. At the embassy, it was 60 euros a piece just to be fingerprinted. And by the way, visiting the US embassies, you think you're going to show up and be offered milk and cookies and welcome home? You are not. You are treated like a foreign something else. So embassy visits were not fun.
That is interesting. That is interesting. I remember. So that is. I have heard that it's more complicated. And to your point, I do believe these things are changing rapidly in every country all the time. And it's something that if you're not paying attention to it, you may not realize it. So, but right now, like it is something that changes all the time, and you have to check all the time what you need to do.
My advice is do it from your states where you're supposed to do it from, and then you don't go through because then you don't have language barriers. Like we had a language barrier at that point, and we actually got here and we paid someone to help us do it because we pay there's Portuguese companies here that will help you do it, and it was worth the extra expense for us because the language barriers on doing this stuff it's there. It's miss, you know, because you just don't know all the things. So it was worth, if you did do it from here, pay someone to help. Don't try to do it yourself. But do it from home and you don't have that situation. And
Absolutely.
it would take a heck of a lot less time and it not cost you near as much. Save that money to get over here and drink wine and eat food.
That's right. Absolutely. All right. So that's all very, very cool. All right. So in a minute, we're going to do the final rapid fire questions. But you mentioned this quickly, and I want to come back to it. As a part of this process, you retired your husband from his career in oil and gas, and you started a new business, which is some form of coaching. And I want to give you a chance to talk about that and share with us what it is you're doing. How can people find you? How do you help people these days?
Yeah, so I'm a marketing strategist and business coach. I've found it takes both to really get people to do marketing the way they need to do. I support small to mid-sized business owners because I've always been one and I always wanted to. So I've pulled back out of corporate life and started supporting them to get online and really create marketing that lands them clients. And it's been incredible. It's been an incredible ride. This is the fifth business I've built over 30 years. And it's the last one. Famous last
This
words.
is
Famous last words, Amy. You're going to hold me to that one. but this one's it. It's but I enjoy it and it's truly amazing. And yeah, I've been able to he hasn't had to go back to work. He actually now supports in the company. He's taking over handling all my video editing. He helps me run my events. He's the guy behind the scenes running them so I can just show up and be the star. And it's been incredible being able to support more people to just be able to live their dream life instead of staying stuck in a life they don't want. Because whether it is you want to move to another country or you just want to have freedom of even you know, I want to work at the cafe down the street for 2 hours and not spend 6 to 8 hours in a cubicle somewhere and work or drive, sit 2 hours in traffic driving to work every day. It's just incredible to be able to help empower more women and enlightened men, as I like to say, because that's who I work with. And it's freaking amazing. It really is. And people want to find me, look me up on LinkedIn, Heidi Medina.
Heidi Medina on LinkedIn. All right, so you have a special offer for the audience, which I'll share, which is a product that is called Get 55 Client Attracting Ways to Share Your Lead Magnet Without Feeling Pushy or Salesy. And there is a link to that in the show notes and also in the email that goes out. If you are a subscriber to Imperfect Adulting's email community, which everybody should be because that's the easiest way to get these wonderful offers from our guests. Now, I am going to ask you three fun questions. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. When you're in a bad mood, what's something you do to try and cheer yourself up?
Take a bath.
Okay. What is your favorite kind of cookie?
Ooh, chocolate chip.
When I wrote this question, I wanted to write, and why is it chocolate chip? But I didn't know that yours would be chocolate chip. And I figured that there is a possibility that there's somebody out there that doesn't love chocolate chip cookies, so I shouldn't put it in there. But those are my favorite two, chocolate chip and Thin Mints. What is the most romantic thing anybody has ever done for you?
Oh, well, I have to say it is Valentine's
It is
Day.
Valentine's Day when we're recording this. That's right.
So just for that, hubby got flowers today.
Ah, very nice.
that's been one of the fun things. He actually, over the years, he's taken me traveling. He's always getting me pretty flowers for the romantic stuff and just making sure, I'll tell you one of the things I find the most romantic he does. Sometimes he'll go to the spice shops and he'll know I've had my eye on a new one that I haven't tried yet, and he'll bring it home.
That is very romantic because it's something that you know that he knows that you like, and he's like doing something for you that you haven't done for yourself. Wow. He's a keeper.
Well,
You already know
he's
that.
also a little self-motivated because
Sure.
he's my official taste tester, so.
Still, I'm giving him a compliment here. Let's do it. All right, that's it.
No, he blows it out of the water when he does that. I mean, it is. It's like, oh, there's that spice I've been wanting to play with.
Very cool. Thank you very much, Heidi Medina. You have been a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Brilliant conversation.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obviously, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.